Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, I'm Debbie Mackey.
And I'm Alan Mackey.
We are your hosts on Left of Liberal, a program and a Facebook page we've created. When you look for our Facebook page, look for the White Peace Poppy, because there are other Left of Liberals we're not associated with. We also have a phone number you can call if you want to contact us at 512-517-2708. And then we also have an email of leftofliberal@outlook.com. Just because we may be short of time at the end, I'm also going to say be sure and tune in to Stuart Alexander's show, 1 Hour Left, on Wednesdays at 8 p.m. Central. And we'll be on again with him on Wednesday if you want to tune in.
One of the main reasons we have undertaken doing this program, Left of Liberal, is because we feel very strongly peace and disarmament are central to most working class issues and form the basis for pulling together a massive, broad-based, all-people's front comprising liberals, progressives, and leftists, and many other people, irrespective of class, but the left oriented towards working class issues, focused on anti-imperialism, is going to be a catalyst in educating and organizing this all-people's united front for peace and disarmament, for equality and social and economic justice, with socialism on the table now, not later. And tonight we have a special guest from Greece, Stathis Stathopoulos, and we're going to be talking about what's going on in Greece, a little bit about the history of Greece, and where the working people are now in Greece as far as what the banks are trying to do to Greece, placing these austerity measures on the people and forcing them to fight back for their rights. So with that, Stathis, welcome, and we appreciate you staying up at 3 o'clock in the morning to be on the program.
Thank you, Alan. It's a good opportunity for me to be able to speak and discuss on the air with people from the U.S. and other places. So for one time, we can do it.
Okay. And maybe, you know, well, I should say that Stathis is an ardent supporter of the KKE. That's the Greek Communist Party. And it's the oldest party in Greece. And it's gone through a lot of severe repression and everything over the years. And Stathis will explain a little bit about this. But maybe you can start by explaining a little bit about the older history of Greece.
Well, where to start? If we start with the birth of the what we call Kappa Kappa Epsilon here, the Communistiko Komma Ellada's, it was a product of the revolutions happening around the world, and especially in Russia in the early 20th century. There were socialist groups here before, but they came together after the success of the October Revolution, and then they formed, the name was changed to Communist Party of Greece, and it became a member of the Communist International. Since then, in the 20s, it went through severe repression, mainly because it opposed the imperialist war that the British conducted against Asia Minor, Turkey, and the young Soviet Union. It went through many times. It went through banning. It was banned in 1920s late, and then again in the 1930s. By 1936, when the fascist dictatorship of Metaxas came to Greece, then the Communist Party was again banned. Most of its members and all of its Central Committee were incarcerated, executed in exiles. By the time the Nazi army came to Greece in 1940, most of the members were in jails. In fact, it is characteristic that when the Nazis did come in, the fascist government of Greece turned the prisoners over to the occupiers. Many escaped and started the resistance movement, which from 1941 to 1944, until the Nazis and the Italian fascists left Greece, the Italian fascists a little earlier because they surrendered in 1943, the Communist Party built a mighty resistance movement. You may have heard of it. In 1944, when the Nazis finally were driven out, both by the mighty blows of the Red Army in the north and by the resistance of the anti-fascist struggle of the people in Europe, especially in Eastern Europe, then the British came in 1944 in the very just liberated Greece. The British intervention resulted in a bloody war for a month or so, what we call the December events in 1944, until the resistance was mostly disarmed. Instead of disarming the collaborators, the British disarmed the resistance fighters, who were only asking at the time basically that the collaborators be punished, that they be disarmed, and that some kind of democracy, even bourgeois democracy, would be established by getting rid of the king and giving some relief to the people that were hungry and sick of the war. So in another two years, another struggle started. The Democratic Army of Greece tried to get rid of the new intervention and basically finish the job, get Greece into a sort of democratic path. By 1948, I think, under the Truman Doctrine and the Marshall Plan, we had new guests, if I might say so. The U.S. took over from the British. The Democratic Army was defeated by 1949 after a valiant battle, and the Communist Party was again banned until 1974.
Maybe you can describe some of the repression that took place, because Greece was one of the first targets of implementing the Marshall Plan. And then the dictators that took over, like what kind of repression did the Greek people and the Communist Party face?
Well, many of the leaders that were, not only leaders of the Communist Party, but leaders also of the trade union movement. For example, Thanasis Papariggas, who was the father-in-law of Aleka Papariga. He was the head of the the General Confederation of Labor, which was reestablished in 1944, 1945. He was just assassinated. Many others were just killed. These bands that worked with the Germans were armed, and they would carry out terror activities. So that was one of the ways. Another way was the persecution. People were fired from jobs if they had. They were not hired, but there were also exiles, gulags, The famous one is the Macronesus island where thousands of resistance fighters and especially communists were exiled. But it wasn't just an exile. There were torturing going on. There was psychological pressuring for them to sign documents that they denounced the Communist Party and their previous activities. This was kept until 1952, I think. But the banning of the Communist Party continued. And
we're talking about not just an individual here or there, but we're literally talking about tens of thousands of people
yes.
who had been part of the resistance against the Hitlerite fascist and Mussolini, who are now targets, made targets largely by U.S. imperialism, right?
Yes, so the U.S. Ambassador was running, his name was Purifoy, I think, at the time, you know. We use the term today to call, because we have Mr. Payat, who was in Ukraine. We have this is the ambassador to Greece now, and we call him the new Purifoy. He was running the things basically from the U.S. embassy. And not to say that that the Greek fascists were innocent, because they participated. Many of them feared reprisals. Many of them had collaborated with the Nazis. They had become rich. It's very difficult to describe all the things that happened in the 1940s here. But what remained after 1952 was basically a U.S. Control, if not occupation. And they ran, they used Greece because they were afraid of communism being expanded. And Greece and Turkey became, but mostly in Greece, because in Greece there was a resistance. Suffice to say that many of the communist leaders who were coming back after, because in 1949 they became, most of the army that they had, the Democratic Army, at the end of it was able to find refuge in the socialist countries of the time. For example, there were 7,000 people in Tashkent, in Uzbekistan, and many other socialist countries. And many of them tried to come back afterwards in the 50s, mostly in clandestine activity. A very well-known name is Nikos Belogiannis. You may find it in mentions, in books. He was tried under this U.S. Controlled. Basically, it was an order to kill Nikos Belogiannis because he was a great leader of the resistance and the Communist Party. And he was tried, and because of this trial, there was a great outcry all around the world. Pablo Picasso made a painting or a sketch, I think it's more likely, called The Man with the Carnation. His face with the carnation facing his accusers is quite famous. And just to make this story short, from 1950 to 1967, the upheaval continued in Greece with the Communist Party illegal, but still with great support. And in 1967, fearing another upsurge of the movement, the U.S. Planned and instigated a new dictatorship, a military dictatorship, which we call the military junta, which lasted for 7 years. And it fell under the blows of the popular movement and the events at the Polytechnic Institute in 1973, but also at the betrayal of national interests of Greece, because the result of their reign was to get Cyprus partition. They with their actions, they allowed Turkey to come in and basically take half of Cyprus. The plan was to make Cyprus into a military base, because it was in the non-aligned movement at the time. And by making it either Greek or Turkish, they made it into a NATO base. Not that they're very far from that plan today, because we can see the results. This is where Cyprus is heading. Given its proximity to the Middle East and to Syria and to Israel, it often becomes a launching pad for attacks against the area. So just to finish my rant here, in 1974, the Communist Party of Greece became de facto legal again and started its legal activities. And since then, it has been steady and I think now even more stronger than before.
So all of this repression took place largely under the direction of the United States in order to prevent working people from coming to power under the leadership of the Communist Party of Greece, right?
More or less. The U.S. was becoming the dominant player in the imperialist camp. It was had started NATO in 1949, and Greece became a member of NATO in 1951. And the area is very strategic, and it was right at the foot of the then socialist camp. And it was very important for the U.S. Imperialist interests.
It was one of their bases against the Soviet Union that they wanted too, right?
Yes, and even now against Russia, even though there is no Soviet Union, Greece is lately, even with this so-called left government that we have, has increased the number of U.S. bases in Greece. We have now 6 of them, and we are talking about major bases. And maybe one of them, we suspect, has nuclear weapons. The base in Creta, in the Suda Bay, what we call, is a veritable, fortress.
Yeah, bringing us a little up to date now. A lot of people on the left here in this country, and I know Canada and some other places that I've talked to people, they don't really understand the role of Syriza. Maybe you can explain how Syriza came into existence and Syriza is really part of the whole plan to try and prevent the Communist Party from leading the working class to power. Can you explain all that?
I will try.
Okay.
First of all, the acronym Syriza means coalition of the radical left. That it comes from the Greek synaspismos, of Aristera, which is left. It started in the 1980s with the Communist Party participating in it. It was a coalition of parties, all the left parties at the time, including some variations of the Communist Party, the Euro-Communist component, and some other groups. Initially, it was to unite the left. It developed a reformist platform, and at some point the Communist Party exited this coalition. Since then, it has become how it has become. I would say the reason is that in Greece, there has always been some type of buffer, between the Communist Party and the people's struggles and the bourgeoisie. It's not the first time. In 1974, for example, when the Communist Party became legal, the bourgeois class here, what we call the capitalist class anyway, the big capitalist class, wanted to create an image that there is some kind of left. And if you may remember that there was a party called PASOK, which means
right.
Pan-Hellenic Socialist Movement, headed by Andreas Papandreou at the time, the son of George Papandreou, who had brought in the British in 1944. But anyway, immediately they started saying in the 1970s that they are more left than the communists and the socialists will be here tomorrow. I still remember their slogan, Socialismos Avrio. They privatized more state-owned industry than the previous right-wing government, all under the guise of some kind of socialism, which nobody understands what it means. What they did do, though, is to give people some things, you know. For example, public health care. They hired a lot of people in some of the state industries. They gave cheap loans. They helped the agriculture, but all with a caveat, you know, it was to be paid later.
Right.
For example, they lowered the prices of agricultural products by giving financing to the farmers, but the prices that the farmers sold remained constant all those years. So at some point, all those had to be paid back. And at some point, they kept borrowing money, both the Socialist Party, which governed for many years in Greece, and the right wing, the Conservative Party. They borrowed money to keep the people satisfied, so to say.
Who did they borrow the money from?
Well, the states borrow money in a number of ways. One of the ways to issue bonds, you know, like in the U.S., I'm sure they issue bonds to individuals, but mostly to pension funds, internally, I mean. But also there could be other agents who lend money. Even fund managers from external sources. It was basically borrowing from private investment. At some point, when this blew out of every proportion, you know what we say here, our party teaches us, all the money comes from the work of the workers. There is no
right.
other money. All the money comes from there, either from pension funds or from not paying the workers well, or from... We have at least three or four instances where the state has reached into the pension funds and used that money to bail itself out. So it's not the first time. They promoted the idea of investing into the stock market, which is a way of helping the capitalists to finance the capitalist development. In the 1990s, and a lot of the pension funds, even the church at the time, you know, invested in the stock market, and they lost a lot of money, of course, there. Then they started another plan with the bonds, government bonds. I don't know how many people know this, but Greece must be one of the very few countries in the world that actually took people the money that people had in bonds and just cut it in half, or more than half, 60%. I know people that had invested even 100,000 euros and they were left with 36,000 euros. They just took the money, you know, in a few years ago. It's a program called PSI, which is the public, what is the name? Public Service Investment, something like that. I forget exactly the name. It's called PSI. It's very famous. They just basically made people invest into the future of the country, and then they just took it.
They stole it.
At some point when it became out of control, and the interest rates were becoming uncontrollable, the IMF came in. There was a difficulty in bringing the IMF in, the International Monetary Fund, you know, which
right.
comes in only when there is a very grave situation. The IMF gives short-term loans. There was a difficulty in bringing the IMF in because what a lot of the countries in the IMF, including China and some other countries, were saying is that you are in the European Union. Why don't you get money from them? But the EU did not have a mechanism in order to do this kind of thing. So what happened was that the IMF came in and facilitated the transfer of the debt from private lenders to countries. So now Greece owes most of the money that it owes as a state debt to countries, to Germany, they put money up. So now there is a European mechanism that it's called that, I think, European Stability Mechanism, I think it's called. And all the debt has been transferred from private to countries. The whole idea is to bring back normality, as they call it, to make Greece go to the markets again, which is not an easy thing because once you start doing that, the interest rates go up. The money that the IMF gave is a short term, and it's a very, very low. I hear sometimes people say, you know, that they are high interest. They are not high interest. The IMF, but it's very small. To give you an idea, out of the 100 or I think 340 billion euros that Greece owes, the IMF put up about 16, you know, and it takes all its money back by the time the program is finished.
Yeah.
What the IMF does is to facilitate all the reactionary changes to cut pensions, to cut the salaries, to stop all kind of benefits, you know, all these things that we have been going through the last, to basically teach us to live within our means, as they call it, you know. Even though they have robbed the people from everything money they had, they still talk about living within our means. While the most of the money has been wasted in capitalist investment and in military. Let me not forget. You know, when the Greek government, this pseudo-left Syriza government, says that they are proud to be able to be the best customers of NATO, what they mean is that Greece is, after the U.S., the highest percentage, it more than meets the 2% that is required as a minimum. 2% of the GDP. 2% of the GDP is about 4 or 5 billion euros, which means that in a budget of 50 billion, in a budget of 50 billion that Greece has, it's a small country, it's about 10%. So compare that with how much money is being spent for health and education, and you will see that it's a huge amount. And this doesn't include the national army. So the spending that Greece does, for what purpose nobody knows, for military equipment that is not defensive, you know, it's mostly offensive, and it might get us into a very serious war because all these plans are not being made for nothing. I hear now that there was new attacks against Syria, for example, from Israel. Greece has a strategic alliance with Israel. Greece, Cyprus, and Israel is not in NATO, but through these strategic alliances, who knows what might happen tomorrow, or if there is a move against Iran, for example. Greece has participated passively, I would say, in the attack against Libya, and in other places it has army units in Kosovo, in Afghanistan, anywhere the NATO calls. So it's not only dangerous, but it's also a very big weight. It doesn't allow us to use it. For example, to give you just one example, last year there was a big fire near Athens. More than 100 people died in this fire. We're not talking. The question was raised: why don't we fly the military planes to help us put down the fire? And the response from the Ministry of Defense was that they are not allowed because of that they have NATO duties.
So all this has resulted in severe austerity measures being placed on the Greek people, right?
Of course.
And what's been the response of the working class to these austerity measures?
The organized working class was basically sitting around. It helped. It helped get Syriza. Syriza was a very small group in the beginning of this crisis. They were getting about 3% in parliament. They would just enter, you know. The Communist Party was much bigger. They utilized this crisis from 2010, 2012, when the IMF started the measures here. They created a demagogic response to it, you know. People were getting out into the squares, you know, and they were saying, we're not going to take this. Something like we see in France, you know. Now, how can you do this to the people and this and that? But at the time when Syriza started getting bigger, they started pulling out from the movements. And they said, well, we're going to be the government now. We are a people's government, and we're going to take care of it. They didn't do any of that. They made it even worse. But the response was very high. I remember even in my small town here in Sparta, where I live, which is only about 15,000 people, there were huge demonstrations. But by the time the Syriza government came into power, into government, in 2015, this just basically disappeared, you know. The people relied on the government. And this is the only thing that is moving, basically, is what the Communist Party is doing, which is working on a number of levels. One of them is to help set up restructures, we call it, reconstitute the working class movement into a basis of what we call class-based, so that it basically understands what class it is, what it represents, and what its aims are. And while we stay within the General Confederation of Labor, at the same time we have created what is called PAME, which is all Greek militant Panhellenic militant workers union, something like that anyway.
Workers Front, yeah.
Yeah, Workers Front, sorry. I try to translate.
Yeah.
I lose the Workers Front. Yeah, it's not actually another union, you know, but it includes unions. There are locals and there are federations. There are federations in it, but it's not separate. This is the nice way of working in Greece. It's not like they have in France, where they said that there was a separate set of unions, you know.
Yeah.
Earlier on. Now they have changed. So they basically what we're trying to do is to get the official labor movement to become more militant, to become class-based, not to have managers, for example, and capitalists inside. We have some unions that are run by the bosses. They cannot be expected to take the side of the workers. They,
right.
Basically, what they are doing is what is called class collaborationist approach. We had a big conflict a few months ago when at the convention of the General Confederation of Trade Unions, we called for a clean slate, you know, to have only workers and their unions, and not to have bosses and managers. But they like to have something from the top, you know, they want a fancy hotel. Anyway, we are fighting, and more of those unions and labor councils, city labor councils, are becoming more militant. They are aligning with PAME, and we hope to be able to have a labor movement that's worth its name. It's not the first time, by the way. We created this is the General Confederation of Labor. When it was created, it was synonymous with the Communist Party in the 1910s, you know. And then in 1944, it was created again because it was dissolved by the Nazis, you know. It was created again and then again now. So we are our trade unionists are very involved. I would like to say that this experience with Syriza must become the study of all the people around the world, and what social democracy in its worst phase has meant. It's not for me to say what other people should do around the world, but it's worth studying this situation, because what we have now after 4 years of Syriza is basically the right wing coming back again. We just went through an election for municipal and labor and local and regional elections and the Euro Parliament. And in the 13 regions, the right wing has won all of them, almost, maybe 12 out of 13. Syriza did not win even one. And not even PASO. So what the social democrats are good at is to return the conservatives even with greater force.
Well, they made an alliance with some of the right wingers, right?
Yes. They made an alliance with the ultra right wing. They had him as a minister of defense, and his role was to bring in the U.S. They have broken now with this alliance, but most of the job has been done, you know.
Yeah. A big part of the problem, I know here in this country, all these left-wing groups, they bring in Representative Syriza as if these are great representatives of the working class and the people's movement and everything. And people here don't understand that Syriza is really a concoction of really the international, the Wall Street people and everything, in order to prevent the communists from coming to power in Greece. They've been doing this over and over again. They used fascism to prevent the Communist Party from coming to power, and now they're using the Social Democrats.
Or they use both, you know.
They're both, yeah.
We have seen an upsurge of the fascists also. We are beginning to see them. What I mean by fascists, I mean open Nazis, you know, the Golden Dawn. Here, what we call it, they have been also been boosted. They have been on trial for basically crimes. They killed some people for 4 years now. Years now, we have seen the trial of the Golden Dawn, and one of them that is on trial, was elected to be a member of the European Parliament. While there is a pretense that they go against the fascists, they allow them political life, you know. It's a very hypocritical and double-faced situation.
Yeah, Steve Bannon has been traveling all across Europe trying to unite these fascist forces from Italy and France and Great Britain and Greece. And it's a dangerous situation. People thought the Hitlerites would never come back to power, and yet here we have Steve Bannon, who was supposedly fired by Trump, but really he's sent over to Europe to bring these fascist parties together, and it's a very dangerous situation.
Yes, we're aware of that. There are moves to unite them. There is a What they are taking advantage of is a certain, what do you call it, discontent, you know, with the European Union. And they're pushing this economic nationalism, what they call economic nationalism, which is basically a facade, because there can't be such a thing in capitalism, the economic capitalism. Who are the national capitalists? They are all in the stock market, and everybody can buy stock. Even Greece is an imperialist state. There are big monopolies that are connected with other countries, but they are, they attract small business people and shop owners, you know, who have this belief that they can be, they can run their own country, as they say. But within that, there is the fascism, which has always been the case with the small store owners. You know, it's a good base for them.
Right. That same thing here in this country.
Yeah. Trump is pushing some type of economic nationalism also there. I mean, it's similar.
Yeah. Maybe you can explain a little more about the attacks on pensions and health care and the response of the people to these attacks.
Well, pensions. I should tell you, we have a pensioners association here in my province in Laconia. I am the secretary there. I'm one of the people in the leadership. We try anyway. The pensions, some of the pensions have been cut by half.
Pensions? Like when you say cut in half, what were the pensions, and then what are they now?
Well, the pensions were in the region of about 1,000 euros per month. Let's say average now. I'm talking average, right? Because they were higher and lower, but average, they were about 1,000 euros. Now the pensions are 60% of the pensions are below 600 euros. So this is what we're talking about roughly, if the figures are right that they are giving, you know.
Yeah.
We know people that were getting about 1,500 euros, for example, and now they're getting 800 euros.
How does this compare with the standard of living, cost of living?
Let me tell you the standard of living. The standard of living. To give you an idea, the rents are lower here in Greece than they are in the U.S., much lower, but everything else is higher. For example, we have a VAT, you know, is that the right thing to call it, a value added tax, which mostly goes to the EU, about 24%. So anything that you buy or service or goods, has 24% surcharge on it.
So is that on food and clothing?
On food and clothing, there are some items in food that are now under the pressure, they are lowering it to 13. For example, milk, I think, and some other products. But at the same time, when they liberate the milk industry, to give you a small example, it used to be that fresh milk was considered to be up to 4 days, you know, 4 days old. That protected the local milk industry, because it takes more than that to bring it from, let's say, Holland or the Netherlands or some other country. So when the new measures came, they made it, they called the fresh milk up to 10 days. So the market became flooded with milk from outside of Greece, which is not to say that it's not good or say anything like that, but it destroyed the local milk industry. Similar things happened. So even if the surcharge is lower, the prices have grown anyway. For example, from around 90 cents per liter of milk, now it's 129, 140. The rents are about 300, let's say, average in Athens, about 300 to 400 euros for a one bedroom. electricity. You can see this if you look at the cost of living. They have indexes in the internet. But I'm just giving you some indicative measures.
Right.
The gasoline for the transportation, there is on every liter, there is a €1, €1. We're talking about euro dollars, right? Euros.
Right.
Which is about 108, I think, or something like that, American. Let's say you buy for 158, you buy 1 liter of gas. More than one euro is taxes. Okay.
Yeah.
Then you have road tolls. To go from here to Athens, you need at least 25 euros from Sparta, which is about 240 kilometers, to give you an idea. You need about 24 euros just for the road tolls. Roads that have been built by money from the government, and they have been given to private companies which run them. And hear this: if they are not making enough money, they have the right to ask the government to compensate them. And this is happening because the roads are empty mostly. The people don't travel, so that they're asking them for money to compensate their losses. We have this extraordinary situation. The situation is very difficult for people. Their debts are skyrocketing, almost as much as the GDP in debts. This is how people manage, by getting into debt.
Yeah.
And it's not like they have the jobs to carry the debts, you know. The people owe to the government, they owe to the mortgages, they owe to their friends, so everybody's indebted.
I see that seems to be the trend.
I think from what I see in the US, the trend is there too. I think that people seem to have jobs and still manage, but I think that if there is a break in that, if there is a turn in the economy, many people will be left with big debts. And I don't know how they will manage.
No, we're all in all working people around the world seem to be in a great big debt trap right now, caught in a web.
Absolutely.
What is healthcare like in Greece?
The healthcare is in name still public, but more and more it's eaten away. You know, they still have a private healthcare in parallel to the public, and since the public healthcare is the lines are becoming bigger and bigger and more difficult to get in, more people are going to the private healthcare, and they have to pay for it.
Like how much do you have to pay to go to the doctor under private healthcare? Just
I
for
think
doctors
at least 40 euros. I think 40 euros for the visit, if there's no other complication. Just a simple visit for 10 minutes is about 40, 50 euros.
Does the healthcare include vision and dental and hearing?
If you go to the hospital, most of the dental care is considered to be cosmetic, so you don't they don't cover it, you know.
Okay.
So, but if it's, let's say, you have a serious problem and you need some surgery or something like that, and you go to the hospital, then it is covered. But when we say covered, we should say that it's also that they keep 6% of your pension and 6% from the people too, you know. It's not a gift.
Right.
Let's not say that it's a gift. It's paid, but it's paid in another way, you know.
The pensions that you're talking about, are those private pension funds or like a Social Security like we have here in the United States or what?
It's mostly Social Security. Very few private here. Social Security, now they had a number of different type of funds, but mostly it was work-related.
Okay. And
How are the people in Greece responding to all these NATO maneuvers and everything?
Not very much, except from the Communist Party. The other people are, some of them are even thinking that, well, you know, the American boys will come here and they will bring the money, you know. It's unfortunate that we don't have the response that we used to have. We don't have also those great demagogues like Andreas Papandreou, who used to say, you know, EOP και NATO, το ίδιο συνδικάτο, you know. But basically the only ones who are saying things as they are is the Communist Party and its friends and supporters. We might find ourselves in a very great, difficult situation, and it might be too late for that. This is my own personal view anyway. I hope not too pessimistic. I hope I am pessimistic.
Yeah.
I hope I am pessimistic. Sorry.
Has there been any response from American unions showing any kind of support or solidarity for the efforts of the Communist Party there in Greece?
There have been some locals. I have to find the names from Chicago, I think, and some from California, but not from the AFL, CIO, not those.
Okay.
You wouldn't expect them.
You know, there's problems with international solidarity that have arisen in the last, say, probably the last 30 years. There's been big divisions in the communist parties around the world and everything. And maybe you can explain a little bit about what Greece is leading an effort to try and help correct a lot of these problems. The Communist Party of Greece.
The Communist Party of Greece is in the forefront of such an effort. It started the meetings of the international communist movement in the 1990s, late 1990s. We just had the 20th, I think, the 20th such meeting last October. And you are right, there are great divisions. All of them came, you know, even the Communist Party of China, Vietnam, India, two parties, all of them participated in these meetings. But often what happens is they come and they say their piece, and there was some agreement in some common efforts on issues of peace and Venezuela, Palestine, I think. But we don't see a lot of active activity from such big parties like the one from China, even the Russian KPRF. There are two lines in the communist movement. The line that the Communist Party of Greece is basically promoting, militant anti-revisionist line. There are some other parties I could mention that are along this. There is a group in Europe called the European Communist Initiative, which is composed of a number of parties, mostly small parties. We have seen some developments in Italy with the Communist Party Italia, which has broken off from the Euro-Communist Partito Comunista Italiano. The Communist Party of Mexico, some other parties are beginning to take such a view, you know, that basically, if I can put it into a capsule, the view of the Communist Party of Greece is that in most countries, especially in the West, the states that we're in is the imperialist states. And there is no other intermediate states after this, that there has to be a socialist communist society. And no such ideas like an anti-monopoly front, an anti-monopoly democratic sort of states. Not that there shouldn't be an anti-monopoly fight, but there is no such idea that workers could ally with the capitalists and they could form some kind of new anti-imperialist, anti-monopoly front. It's a big debate, it's a big discussion, and I don't intend to try to resolve it here. You can see the writings that the KKE, Kappa Kappa Epsilon, as we call it, has on its international page.
I would encourage people to start reading the KKE's website. They have an English website that's very good.
Yes. And, inter.kke.gr. There is a document there that is explains it's called the theoretical positions about the program of the Communist Party of Greece. It's a very useful document to read. Very interesting. One may not agree with it, but it's worth reading it.
Yeah, one of the problems is people haven't been open-minded enough to read a lot of these things. And I know I've given them to people, and people say, wow, you know, this has opened my eyes. But until they read these things for themselves, they're not getting another view other than what they've been getting from the mainstream media, the capitalist media. And, you know, there's a lot of left-wing organizations here in the United States. And, you know, in other countries, they're calling themselves socialists, but they call themselves non-Marxist socialists or non-Leninist socialists. And here in the United States, we have, like, Bernie Sanders talking about how he's a democratic socialist and he's not for public ownership of the mines or the mills or the factories. And this creates a lot of confusion. So, you know, I'd like to see a bigger international dialogue about all this.
That's the idea, to create confusion.
Yeah.
That's the idea. The other side is active. We should get our act together.
There's a lot of confusion. Greece seems to be like a guinea pig for imperialism at this point. And, you know, we're not hearing about what the Greek workers are doing to struggle against all these austerity measures and everything. Every once in a while, you'll see one demonstration on television, and the only thing you see is a Molotov cocktail being thrown or something. So there's a big distortion of, you know, why people are protesting and everything. And that's the image the capitalist media wants to create. They don't want to talk about the problems that are bringing people into the streets in Greece.
At the time that they are showing these Molotov cocktails, which is at a few, basically what we call anarcho-fascists, at the same time, right beside it, in the huge avenues, there may be thousands of people demonstrating.
Yeah.
But the media is set up in such a way as to promote and to give prominence to these activities, which are mostly state. If you were here and you would see it, you would agree with me. It's so much state. They happen in the same street, in the same place. I think they have their cameras there from even the day before.
They probably pay the people to do that.
Something like that. We have pictures or photos of them coming out of police vans, you know.
Yeah. So, well, we got to wrap it up. We appreciate you taking the time to come on here and explain a lot of these things. I hope a lot of people will listen to the program and share it with their friends. And, you know, maybe you can come back again and we'll discuss these things further.
Okay, good.
Thanks for being here.
Get some rest. Good night.
Or I will wake up now. This is my usual time.
Okay.
Okay, thanks a lot.
Nice talking to you and putting some voices to the words.
Yeah.
Have a good struggle, as we say.
Okay. Talk to you later.
We are in the middle of elections here, I should say. That's what for us, national elections. The Syriza is the resigned. It's going.
Okay. Good night.
Okay. Good night.
Good luck to the Communist Party in those elections.
Oh, thank you.
Good night.
Good night.
Okay.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time. No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.